Jesse Owens became a national hero when he won 4 gold medals at the Berlin Olympics in 1936. He also ruined Hitler's plan to use the games to showcase Aryan superiority. But Owens returned home to an American brand of racism that made it hard for black men, even famous ones, to earn a good living, and he ended up bankrupt. A new documentary about a life that was full of ups and downs, Jesse Owens, is the latest installment in PBS's American Experience series and premieres tomorrow at 8 p.m. I'm very pleased to welcome to our show the film's director, Lorenz Grant. Did I pronounce it right?
Lorenz.
Lorenz Grant. Welcome to our show.
Thank you very much.
How much did Americans know about what Hitler was doing in Germany in 1936 before the Olympics?
At the time, a lot, but certainly after 75 years later, I think it may have gotten lost amongst the general public almost how famous he was in a way before the games and the incredible sports feats he did have.
Oh, well, you're talking about Jesse Owens.
Jesse
I was talking
Owens,
about Hitler.
Yes. Oh, goodness.
Because many people were calling for a boycott of the Olympics. A key player in deciding to go to them was Avery Brundage, the head of the American Olympic Committee. What did he argue?
Yes, Avery Brundage, certainly a notorious name in the world of sports.
And he's the villain if there is a villain in this documentary.
Yes, I would say that it could be him. Certainly so many athletes had a run-in, if you will, with Avery Brundage, who just wielded a lot of power over, I guess you could call it amateur athletic sports, and certainly the athletic sport world. And he was this is going to be part of his showcase as well. He was going to make a name for himself at these huge, spectacular Nazi games. So Brundage really wanted these games to go on.
So he went on a fact-finding tour of Germany and found that there were no problems.
Yes. According to Brundage, everything was A-OK.
And what about Jesse Owens? What did he think we should do? Did he think we should boycott?
Well, Jesse Owens was put on the spot momentarily. I think in one of the few moments that he spoke out in his life, he did think, well, if there is discrimination going on in this other country, maybe we should look at it and maybe we should not, in fact, go. But, he quite quickly, his coaches and other athletic officials kind of put a stop to that and really reined in that boycott movement. I mean, it really just ended up sizzling.
Well, he would have had to have waited till 1940. If there were an Olympics in that.
Correct. I think the next one was even 48. I mean, no one knew that the next two Olympic Games would have been canceled. So it certainly would have been a whole different Olympic Games if Jesse Owens hadn't gone.
Jesse Owens' running is described in the film as a model of technical perfection. What made his running style so perfect?
His training from his coaches, he had a couple very innovative coaches. Early on, a man named Charles Riley, who was also a father figure. And one of the interesting things he did was he took him to the horse races and he showed them how, the winning thoroughbreds would run. And he would look at them and their heads aren't moving. I mean, they're very focused, sort of the beauty in that movement of the horse racing. And so Riley kind of translated that into Owens. Like, don't have a lot of wasted movement, in other words. You don't, when you look at Jesse Owens' run, it really is awe-inspiring and technically perfect. I mean, no extra movement, no arms, no shoulders, no head. It's just, it's really incredible.
But he also had the perfect body.
Yes. I mean, you certainly have to build upon a gift, I think, that you were given. And I think that's what the coaches were able to help Jesse Owens do, sort of hone it into a technique, into something he could call upon and use.
Do you think we'd even be talking about him if the Owens family hadn't moved from Alabama to Ohio when he was in elementary school?
I do not. I think that was the key change in his life. It allowed him to have a future. And I think Jesse Owens really understood the risk at that time. I mean, this is, the 1920s America, where if you're down south, it is the rural deep south where just any kind of wrong glance or comment from a black person to a white person could end up in death. So Jesse Owens really understood the risk and that his parents took to move them up north to Cleveland. And when he found early on that he had a technique or a skill in running, that was his hope. His hope, hopefully, for a way out of his community.
But he became a father when he was still in high school. That had to be a setback.
Yes, he became a father early on. When he was in college, he already had a child and his wife, they were together. So they certainly were a couple. They met very young. I mean, they really were high school sweethearts. So they had known each other since junior high and carried on, you know, they were together, obviously, their entire lives. But they met as, you know, school sweethearts.
With some bumps in the road. Well, he was a celebrated athlete and a lot of temptation comes your way.
Yes. And I think his huge first taste, I would say, perhaps especially as it impacted his career, was when he got to travel west of the Mississippi for the first time, going to compete out west from Nebraska to California. And when he met, you know, this kind of elite African-American community as well as Hollywood stars, it just was quite attractive and exciting for him, something he'd never experienced before.
It was also a lot less common to be a star black athlete in the 30s than it is today. But he was at Ohio State in Columbus, a rather enlightened city. Did that help? Was he one of only a few black students at the time?
Yes, he was only one of the few black students. You can, you know, we did find pictures of his, you know, kind of track team, and there were a couple other African American males on the team. But yes, it was still segregated. He couldn't stay on campus. But I think Jesse Owens looked at it as, you know, he is. As we have one people saying, you know, he fought good, you know, he fought evil with good, if you will. And he, his match, he felt, and his fight, he felt, was on the track field. That's where he could beat people. That's where he could excel.
And on May 25th, 1935, at a collegiate track meet in Ann Arbor, he broke three world records, tied a fourth within the span of an hour. And that changed his life.
That completely changed his life. And since, of course, at that time there's no television, he was all over the press, the international press, the national press, white and black press in the United States. So that kind of catapulted him into a more of a national figure, almost a world figure, because sports antics, sports fanatics, even in Germany, you know, had heard of him. They really were intrigued.
But that's when he went out west, and he looked like he was like he might not continue to compete at the highest level. What got him back on track?
I think what got him back on track was, I think Jesse Owens was very good at sort of realizing if there was a situation, correcting it. If there's a problem, you know what, I need to reverse gears here. And I think sort of marrying and settling down and being, that really refocused his family life as well as refocused his career right after going to California.
I'm talking to Lorenz Grant, who has directed a documentary called Jesse Owens with a lot of surprises in it. I guess most of us know that he had that incredible success at the Berlin Olympics and then little about what happened afterward, but you tell that story as well. It will be shown tomorrow at 8 p.m. on PBS stations as part of the American Experience series. Can you describe the opening ceremony at the Berlin Olympics?
That just changed Olympic Games forever. That really was a spectacular show. And that was part of, I think, the Nazi regime's goal was to make this an unforgettable event.
We know about it from Leni Riefenstahl's film,
Yes.
Olympiad.
Mm-hmm.
And you even were able to use a little bit of the footage from that?
Well, what we were able to do is, certainly her film is very stylistically representative. I mean, it's very, you know, when you're looking at a film by her, she just has such a stylistic, you know, repertoire.
A great filmmaker for a lousy, terrible course.
Yes. I mean, she was a, you know, in whether or not she's a victim of history, I mean, certainly that's been up for discussion. But certainly her filmmaking was quite interesting and intriguing and somewhat breathtaking. And so in terms of using footage for the Olympic Games and showing that, I really wanted to try and put the viewer in that time period. And we worked with really archival sources all over the globe.
Was the American team the only team with black athletes?
There were a couple other teams, but the American, but they only had like a couple players. The American team certainly was the most anticipated, the most expected, and they were the most diverse at that time.
What did Hitler do when Jesse Owens won his first event?
Hitler was none too pleased. He did attend the games, and he certainly did not go and congratulate Jesse Owens. And you know, in fact, he did leave the stands before you know, the award ceremony.
So he wouldn't have to shake his hand.
So he would not have
But not all the Germans were totally evil. He almost fouled out in the second event, the long jump. And his German competitor, Carl Long, actually gave him some good advice.
Yes. Lutz Long, yes, was his top competitor. And it was probably one of his great top matches of the Olympic Games because, again, yes, Jesse Owens almost didn't even qualify for the finals. And Lutz Long, sort of in a sportsmanship, gave him a little advice. Some people, you know, gave him a little advice on how to stay in the match. Because I think when you're at that level, you want to meet and compete against the best. And Jesse Owens was the best.
So then Jesse Owens beat him.
He totally beats him. And they did, as everyone says in the footage, hopefully, you know, shows and the film tries to do, is what a spectacular match it was. And what, you know, what sportsmanship and gentlemen and men can overcome.
And then he was supposed to have one more race, the 200-meter dash, which he won, but not be on the relay team. Marty Glickman was once a guest on our show, and we talked about how he was bumped from the team. Did Jesse replace him?
Yes. Both Jesse Owens and Ralph Metcalf, one of the two black spinners on the team, replaced Sam Stoller and Marty Glickman.
Who were Jewish. Americans didn't want to embarrass Adolf Hitler by having Jews compete.
It's really just, you know, the geopolitics at the time are, you know, quite incredible and astounding, just from my point as a filmmaker. And, you know, certainly a lot of theories abound. But, you know, really, by and large, it was no way, we're going to have, you know, two Jewish athletes potentially winning and on the medal stand in, you know, at Hitler's games.
Meanwhile, Jesse Owens is a hero here. And in Germany as well.
Absolutely.
You'd expect him to have a wonderful life following that. What happened?
It was still the 1930s. Even though he was getting all these supposed offers in, they all fizzled, and there was no true role as a hero in the 1930s United States America.
How much of a role did Avery Brundage play in his problems?
Avery Brundage was key. He suspended Owens literally, you know, right after the games.
He was stripped of his amateur athletic status.
Yes, he was stripped of his athletic status. It's really one fact that I wasn't aware of, and that did propel and affect sort of the rest of his life, particularly just trying to stay in the spotlight as a runner. You know, he couldn't compete in national or international games that were sanctioned or organized by the Amateur Athletic Union.
And then he went into decline, had some business failings, and then rebounded.
Yes, he is. I think that's what's kind of really inspiring about his story, how he was always able to rebound from, you know, losing early on in California and rebounding and getting his act together for the games, and then rebounding after the games after being suspended, and rebounding after World War II and having a future life as a spokesperson, if you will, a living hero.
He didn't participate in the civil rights movement. And actually, didn't he write a book that was a bit critical of black power?
Yes, he went through some changes. And particularly, I would say he was kind of, he was of a different generation. He was of a different time by the time the 60s roll around. You know, he's almost a civil, a senior citizen, a living, he was a legendary status by then. I think he didn't understand, you know, to him, it was like, fight your battle on the track field, fight with your talent, let's not be, he wasn't a overt, in-your-face, gentleman kind of guy. That wasn't how he fought his battles. But he also, after that book, wrote another one and said, well, you know what, I'm going to revisit that. Maybe, you know, I do kind of understand where younger people are coming from, because young people are always impatient.
There's a lot of really fascinating stuff in this documentary, and I recommend people watching it tomorrow night at 8 p.m. on PBS. A lot of the things we couldn't get to.
Yes.
But thank you so much for coming by to talk about it. Lorenz Grant is the director of Jesse Owens, on PBS tomorrow night. It's been a real pleasure talking with you.
Such a pleasure to be here. Thank you very much.